I need to shine a light onto the wall. A spider signal, if you will. Although his doesn't call people to... Anyway, I need to bring in Mr. Hollywood. And here he is. Sorry, I don't know what happened there. I've lost my ability to do cool intros.
Here's
Mr. Hollywood. It's Will. It's just uses a name called Mr. Hollywood. He's going to dig through the trash cans of... Wait, not Hollywood. You can't be Mr. Hollywood. Where is this game, Burbank, California? Oh, okay.
It's technically Hollywood.
We'll call upon...
Everywhere in Hollywood's called it California's Hollywood, I think.
We'll call upon Mr. Burbank.
Mr. Burbank! That sounds like a character from Mary Poppins! Mr. Burbank, could you help me with... Can you get my balloon, please, Mr. Burbank?
We call upon Mr. Silicon Valley to dive into the tech world of video games. Although video games have never been based out of Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
I don't know who we're calling. We're calling Will. Will, dig through the trash cans and let us know about this game.
I'm probably more of an expert than Mr. Hollywood is at film than at video games and whatever. Anyway.
What you're going to find out, folks, is that me and Will rely so heavily on knowing exactly how these shows go month to month, week to week. Now we're doing something a bit different. We are constantly just tripped up. We're constantly going into a bit and then going, oh no, it's not like that. How do we do it for this one? And we keep forgetting.
This is the most panic-stricken episode you ever hear us do.
It's taken us so long to put this together because all our old conventions are kind of different and new things need to be done.
It's the most awkward way of admitting that most of the time when we do this podcast, we're on autopilot.
Like, to get in and out of the episodes, we certainly are, to set things up. And also, to when we're putting it together, we know exactly what we're doing. And then in this one, we're just like, how do we find out how many... Like, I don't know if you've got any... Because there's no box office. I don't know if you've got any numbers on... What have you got for us, Mr. Video Game Man? Because I don't... Like, I know where we go to get all our stats, all our sales figures and stuff, and they don't cover video games.
I have to say, it was very hard to find. I almost screamed at Google. Like, if Google was a person, I'd be grabbing, going, just tell me the information. But anyway, this is what I found for Marvel's Spider-Man, or Spider-Man Insomniac, as we're calling it. 2018, it was released on the PS4. The production cost... $100 million.
Now, this is what we need, the yin and the yang. We need the yin and the yang. Mm. Do you know production cost? I don't know. That, to me, sounds like too much money. A lot of money. That sounds like a lot of money for a... But also, I recognize it was a really well-put-together game. There was loads and loads of actors in it. It was a very insanely long story. It shouldn't have been that long, but then you get gameplay out of it, so it doesn't work like a movie. All of that, I understand that, but $100 million, to me, it's what a movie used to cost.
Yeah, I mean, the Spider-Man Homecoming cost $175 million to make.
Jeez. So is that what a video game costs to make? Like,
It depends. For a AAA game, it can be quite a lot of money. But you don't need to be a AAA game to make a lot of money. Look at Minecraft, for God's sake. Mm. That didn't cost a lot to make. That was one guy making it. One very good Scandinavian guy made that, sold it for hundreds of millions to Microsoft after. You can do it that way. It's a totally different world. Totally different world. But
so the top video games can cost up towards 100 mil.
Well, I'm just looking at other ones now. Starfield, which I just completed the main story of, by the way.
Came out. I've heard of that.
200 million.
Jeez.
Yeah. And it took a long time. These take longer to produce than films. They unless you're Activision or EA and you just do it every year or whatever. But no, so
add a couple of extra character players and bash it out. Yeah,
but these are basically big things. I mean, Rockstar Games have been working on this GTA 6 for years. I mean, it's been 10 years since GTA 5 came out.
And Duke Nukem is 25 years in the making, but the new Duke Nukem is still not out.
Which new Duke Nukem? It did come out. Spent 13 years in development hell.
Oh, 13 years,
then,
was it?
Then came out and was the...
Oh, I didn't realise that. I thought it was still a running joke that it's never been released.
No, it did get released, and it was bad.
Oh, dear. So $100 million to make this game. That's really interesting.
Very interesting. This is a lot of money. Now, copies sold as of June 2022, 33 million.
That's not sales, then. That's not actual copies of the game.
Now, I tried to calculate an estimate.
That's a lot. 33 million, and each game is like, what, $40 or something?
Well, I estimated about $50 to $60 because games now are like £40 to £60.
You're kidding me. Yeah,
they've recently, what? The last couple of years, I always had 40 quid, was no more than 40 quid.
Yeah.
And Starfield was 60 quid. And I was so mad. But I managed to get a good deal somewhere and got it for a bit cheaper. But I was like,
that's crazy.
So we'll say $50, $60 for a new game.
I don't know if I could justify in the current... Even when I was last actively buying games for my... Like, I asked you, like, so what kind of game should I get? And you said Red Dead Redemption, and I went and bought it, and it was the worst game I've ever played in my life.
We're not having this argument again.
I'm going to, like, CEX or whatever and buying secondhand stuff. I'm not buying a new game. I'm not a jamoke.
I'm not a guy.
I didn't just get off the train, kids. I'm not buying a new game. I haven't bought a new video game in a long, long time. So I don't think if I suddenly had the desire to play video games again, I don't think I could walk in and drop 60 quid on a game.
I barely drop full price on a game that comes out. What I do is on Steam, I wishlist everything I want. And then every now and again, they go, hey, this game's 50% off. And I go, buy. And my rule is, if a game is on offer and it's under the price of a pint, I will buy it.
I just feel like a granddad now because I don't quite know what you're talking. To me, when you buy a video game, you walk into town, you go into a shop, you pick it off the shelf, and you give the man money. But you're talking about something else, downloading.
It's basically you have your game library, and it's where you buy and you download it onto your PC and play it through there.
Right.
It's a great way of doing it. I do kind of miss the days of, oh, I'm going to ride my bike 20, 30 minutes or whatever to go from Stubbington to Fareham. That's a local based thing. To go to game. And then, oh, I've saved just enough money, and finally I can play Metal Gear Solid 2 on the PlayStation. That's going to last me my weekend.
But within the last how many years, 10 years, it would be like, oh, I've got like 15 quid, 20 quid burning a hole in my pocket. I'll go down to the CEX or whatever, and I'll just see if there's anything in the secondhand thing for like 10, 15 quid. Is there anything that catches my eye? Yep. And I'll play that. And I'll go and play that for a bit.
That's what I used to do. Now I do it with Steam sales.
Got you.
Anyway, in the meantime, I imagine...
33 million copies sold.
Yeah, I was about to say, in the meantime, everyone's sort of like going, oh, for God's sake, and start. I'll do the maths myself then. Anyway, I've done the math on this, so about, you know, what the total sales are. So, 33 million as of June 2020, we're going by, say, $50 per unit, per copy sold. That would be a total estimate. You ready for this, Rob? $1.3 billion.
Gee, a billion-dollar game.
This is what people... who talk down about video games need to understand. It's a more lucrative industry than the film industry. It is not a child's play thing. It is a much more lucrative and popular industry. It's brilliant.
And that's, what, 4 years of sales then?
4 years of
2018, sales. 2018, 2022.
Yeah.
And obviously the amount it sells every year will diminish as time goes on because they're just the popularity going. But that's $1.3 billion in 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
I mean, and I think
it has a very different shelf life than movies in all respects. You don't pay as much for a movie because the experience is shorter. Mm-hmm. But also, movies are out of cinemas within 2 months, whereas this is sales accrued over 4 years. Mm-hmm. Movies don't really do that. I mean, there are DVD sales and things, although not anymore. But yeah, amazing. But
movies don't have the replay value too. Anyway, let's get down to...
Really?
You watch a film over and over again, but you can't spend like 100 hours on a film.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
exactly. I know my stuff, man. So let's get down to...
I don't think there's a video game I've played as much as I've watched The Sopranos over the years. I think if you take The Sopranos, I probably watched that 100 hours or something.
I could probably name 3 video games that I have spent that amount of time of. They are City Skyline, Kerbal Space Program, and No Man's Sky. I've spent over 100 hours on each of those, and I do not regret it. Anyway, let's start from the beginning. Insomniac Games Incorporated is an American video game developer based in Burbank, California, and part of PlayStation Studios. It was founded in 1994 by Ted Price as Extreme Software and was renamed Insomniac Games a year later.
Extreme Software is such a mid-90s name.
I should also point out that it's not spelt extreme. It's got a big X at the front.
Yeah, of course
knob.
It does.
Absolute knob. Anyway, that's a very musky thing to do.
Rob Liefeld.
Rob Liefeld. Yeah.
His art studio was called Extreme Comics.
He's all about the
extreme, studios.
Extreme body proportions, more like. Anyway, as well as the Spider-Man game, they've developed some really noticeable game franchises, including Spyro the Dragon, Ratchet and Clank.
I've played
and Resistance.
I think I played all of them. I played Spyro the Dragon. I enjoyed Ratchet and Clank a lot. Resistance was to do with trying to like cause an uprising or something, wasn't it?
No, Resistance was it was an alien invasion.
Oh, I haven't played it then.
This is a funny fact. It got into some hot water because what part of the game took place in Manchester, and you have to go through Manchester Cathedral, and the church were angry at the depiction of the church in a game with violence, and it's just like, why?
Wow.
Why would you be angry at this? It's not criticizing religion. It's literally just scenery. Anyway, that's I like that. Shut up. Marvel's Spider-Man came about after Sony Interactive Entertainment's Vice President of Product Development, Connie Booth, it's a very long title to have, visited Insomniac Games to speak with CEO Ted Price. Booth mooted the idea of Insomniac working on a game based on a Marvel Comics property. Price recalled having a fairly neutral response, as Insomniac had only developed original properties, but his developers were enthusiastic about the project. Price said, Connie Booth, who is a great friend, and also one of our partners at Sony, was down at Insomniac, and she said to me one day, what would you think about working on a Marvel game? I hadn't really considered working on someone else's IP, but the response I got from the developers was eye-opening for me. The answer was, are you crazy? Of course we're going to work on a Marvel game.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing to think Connie Booth created Fawlty Towers and then went and did this as well. What an amazing career she's had.
Oh, no, I almost went, Basil? No, Connie Booth's the other one. Connie's the...
Yeah, Polly.
Polly, yeah. This was weird. It's like, oh, he's not playing the wife. He's just playing, you know, the person he's angry at. Anyway, the project marked a change in Marvel's video game strategy. Jay Ong, a senior vice president of Marvel Games, said Marvel had previously released software based on or tied to the release of films based on their properties, but this meant game developers did not have time to create impressive products. Publisher Activision had been responsible for Spider-Man games since 2000. Ong said that this would no longer be the case and future Spider-Man games were in the hands of Sony and Insomniac. During the game's development, Ong said, "When I joined, I knew that with a treasure trove of some of the greatest superhero stories and characters ever, it should be our mission to devote ourselves to making these great, epic games our fans will love. So along with the senior execs at Marvel and my team within the games business, we devised a brand new strategy to be very selective and only partner with the best games companies on Earth. We wanted to work very selectively with companies that shared our vision, our ambition, and really usher in a brand new era for the Marvel games business. We had a long history of success with Activision, and we still have a great relationship with them. But the future of the Spider-Man console games is with Sony and Insomniac. We're delighted about this partnership, and that's something that's going to continue forward. Activision is in the past with regards to Spider-Man."
It's interesting, and I wonder what the business stacks up like, because there's a big shift in their business practice here. They've gone from kind of quickly produced and released games that tie in with movies coming out, and said and all of the money that those can individually rack up, and they've said, no, we're going to cancel that and switch business practices, so we're not going to do that anymore. We're actually going to have one very good game that takes a long time to produce.
Yep.
and bank on that, making up as much money, if not more, of all these rather hastily and perhaps nowhere near as good games that are knocked out every time. And there are a lot of, you know, if you're releasing a video game with every Marvel movie from 2018 onwards, you could be bashing out loads, couldn't you?
You could, but this is the thing I've always thought about, because you don't see so many film tie-in games like you used to. Back in the 90s, like almost everything had a tie-in game.
Mid-2000s, like Iron Man had one. Iron Man 2 had one.
Yeah.
Daredevil had one. Like...
It's you get them. There's so many of them. But I remember The Simpsons making fun of it, where Martin at the arcade is playing the video game version of My Dinner with Andre, which is just a brilliant gag. But I think that stopped happening because games have got more. They take longer to make because they are more complex. There's much more going on. Because back in like the when you're playing a SNES, all you need is like it's a 2D thing. It's not big. Very quick to make, but now we're talking huge games, huge 3D modeling and all this design stuff that goes with it and taking the time to actually make sure the whole thing works properly. It's more complex.
In the 80s and 90s, not maybe early 90s, not so much, you know, but there was a lot of what in the toy world is called label slapping, where you take an existing, you took an existing game and you stuck a front cover and a poster on it and said, this is the Star Trek Wrath of Khan game. Well, you're just shooting things that have got, and there's nothing that looks like the Enterprise in it. There's nothing there. And of course that changed over the years. And like you said, there was, you know, the ones, but they're still kind of slightly, they're more basic, aren't they? I remember the Batman 1989 game and things like that.
That's good. That, the thing is like when the graphics weren't good to represent things clearly, you could do a lot of label stuff.
Get away with
now,
it, yeah.
Very hard to get away with. So, Marvel did not want the game to be based on an existing film or comic book story and allowed Insomniac to choose a character with which to tell an original story. The team chose Spider-Man, saying they related to the dynamic between the heroic Spider-Man and his everyman alter ego, Peter Parker. Creative director Brian Intihar said, I feel like he's the most relatable of the heroes. As much as I love Tony Stark, it's harder to identify with a billionaire. As much as I love Thor, it's hard to identify with a god. Peter makes mistakes. He has ups and downs in his career, his relationships, his family. I think we can all relate to that.
And it feels like to me, from the youngsters I know through the British wrestling that I do and from seeing things on Twitter and stuff, that a huge amount of this fan base of this video game is young kids.
Yeah.
Teenagers and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not surprised, as we've talked about exhaustively, Spider-Man has always connected with young people because of his relatability. They could have put, in my mind, they could have put just as much work and effort into an Iron Man game. And I'm sure it would have been big, but I don't think it would have made or converted or been as held closely to people's hearts as Peter and Miles are.
Yeah, I think it's more to do with the popularity of Spider-Man as well, because he's up there with the top three, as we've discussed before.
It is, but it's that, you know, when you watch this, you're a kid, you've never read a Spider-Man comic in your life. You maybe have watched the movies, right? But you play this video game, you get lots of Spider-Man stuff, the emotion, the story and everything. I think that makes fans, in a way that I don't know that like a Thor or an Iron Man game could.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Intihar worked with a team of writers under lead writer John Paquette to create an original version of Spider-Man that remained true to the original. Alongside Paquette, the story was written by Ben Arfman and Kelsey Beecham. Christos Gage co-wrote the script, and Dan Slott provided additional story contributions.
That's very interesting. Both Dan Slott and Christos Gage are big Marvel writers. Dan Slott wrote the original Spider-Verse story. Christos Gage wrote the sequel, Spider-Geddon and things. Yeah.
It's good to get their involvement in this. On writing the game, Paquette and Gage said, what we all tried to do at the beginning of the game was consume as much Spider-Man as we can. We wanted to get a sense for what's out there, but then we wanted to forget it all. We didn't want to be too influenced by one specific storyline or one specific take on Peter's character. You're always going to have him juggling his life as Peter and his life as Spider-Man. We did that exercise and we kind of felt like we had that in the back of our head. Then it was easier for us to create our own take on the character. It's so important to respect the source material, but also do your own thing. You're not trying to do the best version of a comic book in a video game. You're trying to make the best possible video game that you can.
I think it really comes across that. I mean, again, I was really, really taken by how much Spider-Man comic book stuff was in it. And sometimes I don't mean like, oh, a nod and a wink to the camera and that's a direct reference to. But they clearly have taken a lot from Dan Slott's very recent run on Spider-Man that I think was just concluding 2018 after 10 years. And they'd really Yeah, they'd really... And I think the fact that they'd clearly made a decision, and this was a very smart decision, to create a different... Like, they're not trying to say this is the comic book Spider-Man. Mm. They clearly, by the design of the costume, right, and the backstory, they've gone different universe, different Spider-Man. And that's so smart for thinking we can have our storyline carry on in a sequel or whatever we're going to do. Mm. And it still will have a loyal fan base.
Yep, yep.
And it doesn't have to move with the times of the comic books or anything like that. But we can keep it faithful to the spirit. This does a better job of adapting the spirit of Spider-Man than some TV projects and some movies that we've seen.
Yeah, it's astounding how you can actually compare this to one of the films. The only other video game that's come close to me in terms of that, again, the Batman Arkham games, because they do the Easter eggs, they do references, but they fit so many characters in there, like from Batman's lore that I did never heard of. Like, you got Calendar Man at one point, the Mad Hatter. You got all these extra people in there, and it doesn't feel overblown. It only works that way in a video game. Because you have these little bits, the little spin-off bits.
And they're just so long as well.
Yeah.
Whereas a movie's got, 2 hours to
Arkham Knight, you get to fight Professor Pig. And I never heard of that character until I read, I can't remember which one he appeared in. I think it was Grant Morrison's run.
Yeah, Grant Morrison created him.
And I was like, this is deeply disturbing. It explains a lot of what was going on during the mission where you have to fight Professor Pig. But yeah, great. I love that kind of stuff. But anyway... Art director Jacinda Chu recalls her first reaction was fear, out of a desire to do justice to a character so many people feel a connection to. At the same time, the longevity of Spider-Man has resulted in lots of iterations and interpretations. This could have created even more difficulties by leaving little room for a new spin on the character, but Chu chose to look at the wealth of the information as an opportunity. Chu said, "There are tons of references online because of that. I can work with a company like Marvel who has a deep well of knowledge. They actually have archives of every Spider-Man comic ever written. Everyone there knows so much about Spider-Man. So in cases like that, it's actually a great resource because so much has already been done." So they've got a wealth of information to use to craft their own way, which is really helpful. It's only with something like this that's been going on for so long you could make something so rich. Yuri Lowenthal provides the voice of Spider-Man. Working with voice director Chris Zimmerman, Lowenthal tried to differentiate his voices for Peter, where he is gentler, and as Spider-Man, where he is more confident, but thought the voices should not be completely different and spent a large amount of time practicing his performances to achieve a balance. Multiple versions of the same conversations were recorded for Spider-Man's open world dialogue for his at rest state and that of exertion. For instance, in combat or web swinging. So he basically, if he's in the middle of a fight or if he's not, the same line of dialogue would be exerted or strained or relaxed. So that's quite an interesting way of doing it. The recordings can switch mid-conversation if Spider-Man switches from resting to being in combat. That is great attention to detail, by the way, because there's so many video games I've played where you're doing something, but you're already in the middle of a conversation and you're like jumping around the place and your character's talking calmly.
Yeah.
So that's great. That's such a good practice in video games, that level of immersion. Speaking about his experience in the game, Lowenthal said, "Thankfully, I was able to approach it like an on-camera role because of the way we filmed the cinematics. We did it all with facial capture and motion capture on a stage with other actors. When I was recording a lot of the in-game lines, most of that stuff was recorded with myself in a booth with the director and production teams. I didn't have other actors to play off, but because we were shooting cinematics like a film or performing it like a play, I got to work face-to-face with other actors. I think you will always get a stronger performance that way. I'm sure everyone is different, but I believe the performance will always be stronger if you're working with another actor. I would say that getting into the headspace was in great part because A, the writing, as that was just ace on this game and makes my job so much easier, and B, the people I was working with. If I'm good in those scenes, it's because William Saylors or Nancy Linnari are as good as they are and better than me, so I have to up my game. I credit my performance in the Doc Ock Peter relationship with how good Bill is. If the scenes are tear-jerking or heart-rending with me and May, it's because of how good Nancy is in those scenes. I had them to work off, and I think that the way we shot it and having the actors there as well as the writing being that good was 90% of my performance, honestly." So again, there's a lot of work that goes in because you've got to pretty much have an actor act now in games. You have to have proper acting.
Yeah, rather than kind of just hit the lines or whatever.
Yeah, or, you know, just write some lines and then someone does some voice. It's like, you look at the first Resident Evil and the lines are appalling. The dialogue is incredibly appalling. And then you see Resident Evil Village. They did this big thing where they showed you how they did the motion capture for this one scene where the big villains of the game are taunting you while you're tied down. And you're looking at the game and then you're looking at the soundstage and they're all there properly getting into it. And it's incredible. It's such a big step in the industry.
It must be similar to the other kinds of voiceover work where you generally you're acting in booths with people rather than come in like the old days of animated movies, come in, hit your lines, off you go, next person come in tomorrow.
Insomniac wanted to modernize Spider-Man's costume while paying homage to the original design by Steve Ditko. The new design features a large white spider symbol that stretches across the torso, gauntlet-like gloves, and a sneaker-style design based on athletic wear rather than knee-high boots.
Why is that a problem, William Preston?
Now,
what have they not done in all their research?
Research why they needed why they shouldn't have changed the costume. What? What are you going to
say? There's something that there's something just how they described the redesign of this costume that will incapacitate Spider-Man.
Okay, what is that?
How does Spider-Man stick to walls?
Oh,
he can't wear shoes. If he wears shoes, his feet can't stick to the wall because he uses electromagnetism, as we well know. Unless this version, this alternate reality Spider-Man has a slightly different kind of power. But Spidey can't wear shoes, otherwise he can't. His feet won't stick to the to walls.
Spidey
or
can't wear shoes. He's a completely different world.
He's barefoot the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
But I loved the design. I loved that. I was really impressed by it because it's a it's small alterations.
Yeah.
And it pays a slight homage, I think, to the 1990s Ben Reilly redesign of the Spider-Man costume during the clone kind of saga, where the black goes all over the costume, all down the arms and the legs, the big black spider symbol. They kind of just, it, like, they've taken that and made it white and stuff. And the gauntlets, I thought were cool. I thought it was, again, it's striking and it looks, it's not like he's going to wear, we're going to completely modernize the character and it's going to be armor-based. And you go, well, that's no longer Spider-Man to me.
Yeah, that's
they did
more
a
Batman.
Great job. Great job with it.
It's good. But speaking about this costume update, Chu said, we needed to modernize the suit. That was definitely something that was really important to us. The other thing, too, if you look at the comic books, it's all 2D. It's not photoreal. You have to translate what that 2D design might be if it existed in real life. When I design a suit, I always think about, well, what would a 23-year-old would-be superhero wear? How would he design his suit? And what would his influences be? One of the first things you'll notice, for example, is that he's not wearing a red boot. But I was thinking, if Peter were a modern person living in New York, what would he be influenced by? I thought he'd be influenced by athletic gear and sneakers. So that's why you look at it. And if you ever go around swinging, you'll see the bottom of his shoes actually look like a sneaker. And again,
failure.
It's a short failure. Like a sneaker. Why don't you go over there and complain at them? Jeez.
Might write an email, yeah.
Write an angry email, and they'd be like, yeah, but it's our version. Shut up.
Then explain to me how he sticks to walls. Give me the science. Give me the power basis.
You're worse than me, mate. You're trying to be me now.
Roll reversal.
Look, we've already done the role reversal. I had a lot of fun with it. Now let's stop that. Stop that. The game's music was composed by John Pesano. He worked on the project for over 2 years, beginning during the writing phase. The aim of the score was to make it its own character and create a cinematic ambience rather than being simply present in the background. The main theme took approximately 2 months to finish. This was then split off for other segments of the score for the other characters. While Pesano was influenced by Spider-Man music from other media, he focused on the slightly older age of the game Spider-Man, adding more gravitas to the score. Pesano said, because Spider-Man had been done so many times before, and not just from a musical aspect, but also from a story aspect, Spider-Man has always been a fun, bouncy kind of character. You know, he's got a lot of banter, obviously, whether it's in the films or in the comics. He's always kind of being portrayed by this young, teenage, happy-go-lucky kid. And then I think Brian's approach on it was in this version of Spider-Man, they aged Spider-Man up a little bit. He's no longer Peter Parker the teenager. He's a little bit older. They aged him up a little bit. He's already been Spider-Man. It's not an origin story, so to speak. So I wanted to kind of do the same thing with the music. Spider-Man music has always been very bright and fun.
I'm so used to the comics, the idea of referring to a 23-year-old Spider-Man as aged up is like, but from all the presentations in media, that's right, isn't it? It's accurate.
It's true. Do you know what that is, Rob? We're just old.
Yeah.
Marvel's Spider-Man uses Insomniac's proprietary engine that was previously used in Sunset Overdrive and modified to support 4K resolutions and HDR for their 2016 game Ratchet & Clank. The game was announced in June 2016 at Sony's Electronic Entertainment Expo press conference. After approximately 4 years in development, Marvel Spider-Man was finalized in July 2018 when it was released to manufacturing.
4 years in development is a long ass time.
Games take a long time, mate. Mm. They really do. As of May 2022, the Marvel Spider-Man series has sold over 33 million copies worldwide. OpenCritic, which is like the Rotten Tomatoes of video games, reports that 95% of critics recommended the game, giving it a top critic average of 88 out of 100. That's pretty good. We know how video game scores are absolutely insane. So anything below 7 out of 10 is rubbish.
That's everyone's scores. People don't give accurate scores for anything. But would recommend is like... It's like a would buy, isn't it? The video game kind of reviews are like, should I buy this? I would buy this. That's the kind of the review. So 95% saying you should buy this game is pretty good.
Yeah, that's very good. The game was a financial and critical success, leading to Insomniac releasing a spin-off title, Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales, and working on Marvel's Spider-Man 2, as well as an upcoming game based on Wolverine.
That sounds brilliant. That sounds like they put the same just now when you said it. They put the same amount of like work into it. That's going to be great.
They've promised it's going to be very violent and 18 rated.
Oh man, does that mean you're going to lose money when you like? I don't know. But hey, whatever they want to do.
Thanks for joining us as we revisit some of our favorite moments from Marvel versus Marvel. Don't forget, our full-length episodes are jam-packed with hours of Marvel trivia, behind the page, behind the scenes, and comic book Marvel history.